podcast showing a lot of love for recovery. Dave talks about shit sometimes it's really dumb. It's dumb. We've all been waist deep in a pool of drugs. Sometimes we really wanna get drunk. Sometimes the podcast is just enough to stay clean. Nothing does it the way that you help my anxiety. Dave and Chris, they were a magical team. I loved Dopey. And my ears are on my screen. I loved Dopey. It's Dopey, a podcast showing a lot of love for recovery. Dave talks about shit sometimes it's really dumb. It's Dopey. We've all been waist deep in a pool of drugs. Sometimes we really wanna get drunk. Sometimes the podcast is just enough. It's Dopey.
So hello and welcome to another edition of Dopey Tuesday. I know I said there will be no more Dopey Tuesday, but once in a while, there's times to have a special Dopey Tuesday. And this is that time because Amy Dopey Dresner is back on the show. Yay. Woohoo. We missed Amy. We need to have her back on. And I also need to say that this episode of Dopey Tuesday is brought to you by Lucid Sober Dating and the Lucid Sober Network. Lucid Sober Dating is the best sober dating, bar none. Go to the App Store or the Google Play Store and download Lucid Sober Dating. It's free. Everyone on there is super attractive and ready to date. Or that's what I hear. I'm personally in a committed relationship, so I can't be fucking with sober dating. But if I was sober and not in a committed relationship, I would be totally all over Lucid Sober Dating. And also the Lucid Sober Network is incredible. Also free. It's got daily gratitude, sober tips of the day, the struggling section, recovery voices, which is over 50 episodes speaking with fellow addicts, sober influencers, celebrities, therapists who deal in trauma, you name it. I'm actually going to be on one of those, so check that out. And then there's Sobriety Addiction Mentor Program, which is a daily accountability feature that Lucid Sober Network just launched. So go to Lucid Sober Network and, you know, listen, support Lucid because they support us. Also, I think maybe we'll do one Dopey Tuesday a month and the rest of the Dopey Tuesdays will just be on Patreon. So if you're looking for extra dopey or just want to support the cause, which we appreciate. There's been some new dopes on Patreon. I actually got this really sweet note on Patreon that I would like to read. Hello, Dave. I stumbled upon you in 2020 on the Knocking Doors Down podcast. You got me through the pandemic. Listening to you, instantly fell in love with you guys. I actually listened from the beginning. I am a listen from the beginning kind of person, and I went back and listened. Chris actually died for me August 21st, driving home. I sobbed. I think it took me until 22 to actually catch up. I've been current with your episode since. I do have some addiction problems. I have never seen any professional help. I always kept it under control. Never been much of a boozer. Love my marijuana and dabbled in cocaine, crack, LSD, not in 18 years. Mushrooms, current mushrooms, a few times a year, marijuana on day to day, uses alcohol on occasion. Now it just doesn't agree with my body and it's not worth it. I watch 90% of my family members going through mostly alcohol addiction, growing up to the grandchild of the biggest pedophile in a small town. Yeesh. Yet he was also the town's hero in the fire department. I'm more on the side of the enabler. I distance myself from most of my family. I really don't have much relationship with them. Most of my adult life has been healing from a lot of shit they've put me through. I spent my time trying to forgive them. They didn't have the tools to do what they needed to do for themselves to make sure that they didn't hurt their own children. I tried to stop a lot of that with my children, but unfortunately, some of the things were too late before I realized the damage I had already done. I have a strong relationship with my kids now, and sometimes we struggle. I'd love to hear this on the podcast. Do I get socks? Yes, you get socks. Also, this woman, I think her name is Carrie, signed up at the $15 level of Patreon, which gets you socks and stickers, even if I didn't read this. So sign up to Patreon. I think $10 gets you a lot of stickers. $5 gets you a few. $15 gets you socks and stickers. There's the Patreon Zoom on once a month. There's also the weekly recovery Zoom Wednesday morning. Sign up for Patreon. Support the show. Thank you, Carrie, for the note. Here is Dopey Drez. Oh, yeah. If you want to send in an email or a voicemail, send it to dopeypodcast@gmail.com. Emails shouldn't be that long. 2 pages max. Some people are writing me fucking 10-page emails. Be 20 minutes on the show. And a voicemail, 4 minutes seems appropriate. Anyway, here is the Dopey Drez. So after many, many, many moons without her, the one and only My Fair Junkie author, former Rehab Confidential host, fucking epic monument to Dopey recovering addiction, and of course, dumb shit, Amy Dopey Drezner is back on the show. Welcome back. How are you, Amy?
I'm good. I'm good, man. You got to have me back on to fucking fill everyone in on the fucking shit show avalanche of grief and medical problems and loss and fucking horrors that have been going on.
Well, the irony is Amy has lost her, and I'm going to say this glibly, but obviously I don't mean it glibly. Amy has lost her mother, her father, her cat, her health, her sanity, and yet she's here to talk about sober dating today. Woo! This is amazing.
Fucking, yeah, man. You gotta, like, gotta get the D. You know what I'm saying?
No matter what, I love you, though, Amy.
I love you, like, baby.
You know, I do. And obviously, even if you're not on the show commiserating, we commiserate off the show.
Oh, yeah. It's been rough. It's been a rough year and a half. Like, I'm, like, literally homeless and, like, shit like that. I was like, oh, and now I can't even be able to drive for a while. And I was like, okay. So, but I have this. Shall I show?
Definitely.
I'm a fucking robot, man. I'm a fucking junkie robot.
Please explain the mechanism that's been sewn into your chest.
It's a vagus nerve stimulator. I had it put in September. It has a wire that goes up. That's a battery. And it has a wire that goes up to your vagus nerve, which is why my voice is a little bit weird. And it shoots up fucking electrical signals into your brain. So like when it senses that you're having a seizure, it's like, no, it's like a shock collar for seizures basically. And it seems to be working, but of course I'm almost at the fucking max and I've had it for 6 months.
But it's working.
Like, yeah. I mean, the EEG looks a little bit better, but next week I'll be at the very max that this thing can do. And everyone's like, you're at the fucking max. Like the therapeutic level is like 1.5. Like, hertz or whatever, like voltage, and I'll be at 3.5 because I'm hardcore.
Well, that's for sure. The question is, have you had seizures in the past few years?
Yes.
Have you had your bicycle helmet at the ready or no?
No, that was my friend's. I gave it back to him. Wow. It had also a like Grateful Dead sticker on it, and I don't really like the Dead.
That's neither here nor there. But that was
no, I haven't had any grandmas. I haven't had grandmas. I've had like weird, like where my eyes, where I felt like it was leaving my body. Like I've had minor ones, but not. And I'm on 3 fucking medications.
So what does it feel like when, and it's all from epilepsy?
Yeah, it's all from crystal meth. Thanks, Tina, you fucking bitch.
So this is it from crystal meth?
Yeah.
Explain that, please.
I'm not the only person I know that has gotten a seizure disorder from crystal, so I have hyperactive lesions on my brain. They found them when I was 5 years sober in a different sobriety when I was living in France. And the French doctor was just like, you know, have you had a head injury? And I was like, no. And he was like, do you have epilepsy in your family? And I was like, no. And he was just like, he goes, did you do a lot of drugs? And I was like,
what's a lot, doctor?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Describe a lot. Cause that's like, So, I mean, what got me into rehab the first time was a seizure on crystal.
Tell the story.
So I'd been up for like 5 days. I think what fucked me up was being up for 17 days in a row. I think that's when I was writing the new Bible and shit like that. I'd been up for about 5 days and I walked into a market and I woke up and I was in an ambulance. And the woman was like, did you do any drugs tonight, sweetheart? And I was like, obviously really shitty ones because here I am, like still a dick, right? Totally a dick. And they were like, what year is it? Who's the president? I had like fucking no idea. And so they took me to the hospital and we're not sure, but like, I'm sure. Cause you're not that disoriented when you faint. You're that disoriented from a seizure. And then about 5 years later, I started having grandma seizures, like bam, 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 bam. And then they were controlled for like 10 years and then everyone died. And I don't know, the stress and perimenopause, cause I'm old, you know, hit me. My hormones changed and that's a big trigger. And stress is a big trigger. And then they came back. And now I'm on 3 controlled medications. I'm on more drugs than when I was on drugs, yo.
Man, I mean, you definitely aren't.
No, I really am.
What drugs are you on first?
Phenobarbitol, which is like...
Yeah, it's a classic.
That's like old school, like yeah, Elvis Presley, and Judy Garland, Marilyn Monroe. Like literally I go to the thing, they're like, is this for your fucking... Why don't you go to the vet? I'm like, it's actually for me. It's not for my epileptic dog, asshole. I'm on the highest dose, I guess, you can fucking give a human being.
A phenobarbital.
Yeah, and then they added Klonopin, and then that worked for a while, and then it didn't, so she pulled it back. And then now we have Xcopri, which is like this new medication that no one carries, and they have to always order it. And when she got up to 200 milligrams, I became instantly suicidal, like instantly.
So that's a side effect.
That's a side effect. And that's why I went in the psych ward, you know? And I was like, hi, I'm really, 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 really depressed, doctor. Because I didn't want her to 150 me.
Well,
I was like, you need to drop it down. So she dropped it down to 150 and I was like, okay. But I mean, like, I'm tired. I'm like, it's a lot of sedating shit, you know, and my memory is like, but none of those really did it. I'm kind of like, my epilepsy is treatment resistant at this point. There's really, I've been on every med. So then they put a battery in my chest.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. Obviously, like, we sit here and we talk about addiction and we talk about wellness and we talk about recovery and we talk about all this shit all day. And still, I'm shocked at what stress can actually do to you. You know what I mean? Like, it's like shocking to me that stress, which comes from some neuroses, fear, whatever in us, triggers this chemical reaction in your brain, which gives you seizures. It's
such had epilepsy. Like,
right. But it triggers it. It triggers the epilepsy.
Yeah. It's a big, big trigger. That and like too much caffeine, you know, getting upset, not getting enough sleep.
Yeah, you know. It's remarkable because like when people talk about managing stress, that's what they're talking about.
Yeah, right? It's gnarly for your body. It's super gnarly. And it's like not something we gave a fuck about. I mean, like before, you know, we would just take something and then that was it. and we can't do that anymore. Now it's like we've got to be in our bodies and feel everything, you know. And some people in AA are like, you're not sober. You're on those. And I'm like, suck my dick, you know. There's an Australian saying called suck it and see, which is like fuck around and find out. So that's my new favorite saying because I have a spiritual penis. It's suck it and see.
Wow. But I want to ask you before we get into the miracle of sober dating, I want to ask you because like obviously we've talked a lot in the past couple of years and we did a recording. But how is all this stress and all of this adversity – difficulty, tragedy, forget all the other words, tragedy, fucking parents dying, the cat
all within 10 months, like everyone fucking died within 10 months, yeah.
Psych ward, and yet you've maintained recovery.
Correct.
How does that work?
You're gonna make me cry. and I have eyeliner on.
The show is always better when the guest cries. So if you feel it coming,
you're such a fucking sadist.
Just let it flow.
You're such a sadist, man. I promised my father. When my father was diagnosed with cancer, he just said, you know, when I die, and I went, if anybody was 80, and he just said, you know, when, Amy, I'm fucking 80 years old, when I die, you know, please don't kill yourself or relapse. I've spent half my fucking life trying to keep you alive. And I promised him. And my dad was my person. And I don't break a promise to my dad. And then when he was, when I had 3 years sober, you guys know this if you've read the book, I was like, oh my God, like 3 years sober, yay. This thing, I have 11 now, 11 years. And he goes, I'll drink to that. And I'm like, okay, don't be a dick, you know. And he was just like, I go, are you ashamed of me? You know, like when you talk to your friends whose kids are like, you know, lawyers and have houses and children and like, you know, your kid's fucking a junkie, like been a junkie and in 6 rehabs and 4 psych wards and can't fucking get it together. Like, are you ashamed? Like, are you ashamed? And he said, my friends wish they had a kid as unbreakable as you, Amy. And I was like, whoa, right? So when he was dying, he said, sorry. He said, you're still unbreakable. Don't let me change that.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though I wanted to just check the fuck out, not really get high, because like with epilepsy, that sounds really scary. And like everything would just kind of come apart. Like I've done that experiment a lot of times. You know what I mean? But more suicide was kind of like the option I was thinking about.
I think that because both of us have so much skin in the recovery game in every which way, you know what I mean? Like it's so built into everything that you and I do. Like I don't think about using. No. I just don't.
Do you think about suicide?
No, I don't think about suicide.
Okay, well.
I think about other stuff, but if your father made you promise not to kill yourself, was that what kept it at bay? I know. Yeah. Did that keep it at bay?
Yeah.
What was more fresh in your head, suicide or relapse?
Suicide.
And how close did you come?
I was starting to, you know, really think about plans.
Did you have a plan?
Not specifically. And even, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it came back. You know, it's like something I've struggled with my whole life. And I have tried to kill myself a bunch of times. So it's not like that far out. You know what I mean? No, I just kick around plans. And it's like, it's an idea that's always floated around in my head for years and years and years. So it's not, you know, but when I start to think about plans and like what I would say in a note, then I'm like, okay, we're getting a little specific and a little close. And this is getting a little scary. And then I tell my therapist, and he's like, how are you feeling now? And like, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I don't know. It seems to be more common. And I wrote a piece about it for Work at Health about suicide, depression and suicidality in recovery, because no one talks about it. But, you know, I just found out that like my friend's sponsor, who was younger than me and was a therapist, killed himself, you know, in January. I mean, it's something that, you know, that, you know, a lot of people with time that fucking kill themselves. It's like a big thing.
I don't know anybody, but I've heard stories.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I've heard stories. Now, when since you are in the public eye, when people and you've had suicidal ideation and you've had suicidal attempts, would you call them attempts?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so I slit my wrist with a box cutter. Yeah.
So when someone approaches you and says, "I'm thinking about it," like what do you say to them?
No one does that.
Nobody does that.
No one really does that. I mean, if they did, I would say, you know, are you, you know, have you seen a psychiatrist? Have you, you know, are you talking to your therapist? How long has this been going on? Do you have a plan? You know, like if you're really concerned about hurting yourself, then you should check in somewhere, even though it sucks.
Protect and that's what you did, yourself. Right?
Yeah.
And where were you at before you checked in at that point?
I was living in Pasadena. I was working as a nanny and trying to fucking get my second book together. And then I went to Los Encinas for 6 days. And then I was in outpatient for about a month.
And what changed?
Nothing changes, you know?
Well, things changed. You know what I mean? You got on the other side of it.
It still comes back. I mean, you know, I'm still trying to put my life back together. Like, I have my own apartment. Now I have a fucking new agent. Now I have a fucking, you know, putting together different jobs for money. I'm a nanny again. Everyone's like, you're good with babies? That seems weird. And I'm like, yeah, I'm amazing. Because I am a baby. So I know what they want. So I'm working with a baby that's like 3 months old now. It's very, like, grounding.
What do you think you would suggest to anybody who's going through depression and recovery or suicidal ideation or hopelessness? How do you get through it? What do you do?
I think 80% of people who have like drug and alcohol problems have mental illness. And so like, that's kind of just our jam. You know what I mean? Like you're going to be dual diagnosis, like most people. And I have always been. So it's like, you just really have to focus on, you know, your mental health. It's like, and it's like, and knowing that it will pass, you know what I mean? Like so many times when I look back at the times I attempted suicide, like, thank God I didn't fucking, I wasn't successful. You know what I mean? You know, everyone's like, oh, you're killing the wrong person. And it's like, okay. But you know, you really hurt a lot of people when you do that. Like, that's the big thing. I've seen the fallout from other people doing it, and people are just destroyed. But I also understand being in so much pain emotionally and mentally and just not just feeling like you're struggling and being like, I got to get out of here. You know, it was like, I think David Foster Wallace, who wrote Infinite Jest, was talking about, you know, people who commit suicide are like, they're like people who jump from a flaming high rise. It's not that they're not afraid of the fall. They're more afraid of the flames that are going to consume them in the building. So you're just kind of like, I got to get out of inside of here. Like, I got to get out. So it's like... Right. Yeah, I wrote a piece about it, and it kind of almost went viral, and a lot of people wrote to me, and they were like, fucking thank you for talking about this. You know what I mean? Thank you for talking about the thing that no one will talk about. And like, you know, because everyone likes to be like, you get sober and all your problems just go away. It's just unicorns and rainbows. Yay. And one girl wrote to me and just said, thank you, because my uncle killed himself, and I was really angry, and now I understand more about what he was going through. Thank you. And a lot of people were like, most people were just like, thank you for fucking bringing this out into the open and like destigmatizing it. It's not like I got lots of dates over it, but you know.
Well, I'm sure the offers you got were not the offers that you wanted
in that situation.
I know. What was I going to say? I was going to say I had asked you what you say to people when they approach you in similar situations. And you said they don't approach you like people who are in that kind of depressive
No, I guess maybe they have. I just say, I understand. You're not alone. I get it. It's going to pass. Get help. Get professional fucking help. Like, thank you for trusting me enough to talk to me about it. Like, I'm a fucking stranger to them. You know what I mean? And I was just like, you know, go get help. See what you can do with meds. See what you can do with a therapy. Build like a connect. But like, please know that it will pass. And please know that you're not alone. Like, I get it. I totally fucking get it. And I'm sorry you're in so much pain. Like, I get it. That's what they want. That's what they need.
And I think that helps a lot of people. And I think, again, we were supposed to talk about sober dating, but I didn't feel like we could until we talked about some of this stuff. And like, and what do you do like to maintain yourself now? Like, what are you doing to maintain your mental health now?
I'm in therapy once a week, you know, I mean, the psychiatrist was like, I don't really have any medications to offer you. You've been on them all. So the ones he has offered me that I've been on make me like, I don't know who the fuck I am or where I am. It's like, I was just like, I've dug back into like borderline, DBM borderline. And I've dug back into dialectical behavioral therapy. And we're going through those skills because I have to use a skill set. I have to use tools. Otherwise, I'm fucked. I can't think myself out of it. I have to take action to change my feelings. I sleep a lot, to be honest with you. If I'm like, I can't handle what's going on, I just fucking crawl into my bed, which is not the best, but it's better than hurting myself or, you know, the other things I used to do. You know?
Right. No meetings. No meetings.
I'm supposed to be going to meetings. I can't drive. I don't feel like online meetings are like the same.
They're not.
My sponsor wants me to go to meetings. He was like, you know, I've gone to a couple meetings with a person that I'm dating who's newly sober and is like very active in the program. Mostly I've been speaking at meetings, which is really like fucking okay. Let me tell you how you should do it. Well, I don't do it. Let me tell you how you should.
Right. That's always a classic. That's always a gem. Oh, no. You want me to speak? Oh, I would love to.
I don't love to. I mean, people are just like, you're fucking great and I want you to speak. And I'm just like, ugh, okay. You know, yes. Service. Okay. I always feel good after.
I think you should be going to meetings. I think you should just go to Zoom meetings.
I should, but how do I fucking get there?
Just go to Zoom meetings. Even if they suck, just go. Just go.
Ugh, they suck though.
You don't go.
I need to get out of the house. I need to get out of the house and be connected, you know, see people.
But if you're in the house, you should just do it. It's like, use the tools. It's fucking sitting there. It's free. Just do it. Just please do it. Give me a break. Every Wednesday morning, it's too early. Actually, you get up fucking early. Every Wednesday morning, we do a dopey one. You should come.
Okay.
Are you up at 6 in the morning?
Yeah, always.
I know you are. So, good. We'll come to our thing. Now, we had the miraculous... Actually, I had the miraculous thing of getting Lucid to sponsor Dopey for a month because I saw you were working with them. And I was like, ooh, what's Lucid? Tell me about Lucid. We need a sober app to sponsor the show. And it turned out Lucid is this incredible free sober app. Yeah. And they're not only an incredible free sober app. Did you know that what I wanted to do before I made a podcast?
No.
And before I was a cookie creator and before all this stuff, I wanted to set up a dating app, a sober dating
app. No way.
Called The 13th Step.
Ah!
Where the only requirement for membership was the desire to stop drinking.
It's hilarious. Hilarious. Hilarious.
Horrible. Horrible.
There's so many like dating sober apps now, but I think Lucid is super special. And I think Lucid is really cool because they have a section for struggling, if you're struggling. And so people come and like support you. And I think that's really dope, you know?
That's the struggle section.
Yeah, and I love that, you know? And then there's also like a whole thing of like, I forget what it's called. It's just, you know, reminds you to do the things, reminds you. Did you do a fucking gratitude list? Did you go to a meeting? Did you you know?
The recovery check-in.
Yeah, and the more that you do it, the more it starts to like personalize it towards you, you know? Because I don't know about you. Like, I know what I should do, but I need someone to push me.
I just need to, when I'm not doing well, do what you just said and take action. Like, I need to practice mindfulness. I need to take action when I'm not feeling like I have it together.
Well, DBT is very, very overlaps with AA because the woman who started it, Marsha Linehan, was in AA. I didn't know that until I was like, God, this seems like a lot of AA tools. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and then I found out later she was, you know, sober.
Okay. Well, I need some tools. What kind of tools you got?
I don't know. I'm just restarting. I had done it here like 10 years ago.
See, what is it called?
DBT, dialectical DBT. Behavioral therapy. Yeah.
I've done DMT, but I've never done DBT.
Of course you have. Yeah. It's still very different.
Okay. So we're talking sober dating now. Ready?
Right.
Dating someone not sober can not only be, this is from MJ Gottlieb, the co-founder and CEO of Lucid. Dating someone not sober can not only be a complete shit show, but deadly. Any
He's right.
more stories?
Absolutely. Oh yeah. I had an ex who we were both sober when we got into the relationship. And then, he relapsed and, he encouraged me. I was on Oxy for a shoulder injury. I think I was abusing it. But anyway, he encouraged me to drink on my 40th birthday. He was like, he was drinking and he was like, you can have one glass of wine. And he knew very much about what that would do to me. And I was also on Oxy and I didn't just have one glass of wine because I'm a fucking alcoholic. And I don't remember the rest of the night, but we were in Vegas and I spent the whole 3 days throwing up in the hotel room. And he never called a doctor. I don't know what's up with when you mix fucking booze and Oxy, but like, holy shit, I was so sick.
I couldn't, when I was dating, I couldn't handle sober dating personally. Like I, in fact, the first time I got sober, I was not in my relationship and I was in a different 12-step fellowship.
Oh, and, really? What was that?
I'm not supposed to mention. I was in a different... No, no, no.
Oh, God. I love how you're like, I protect anonymity.
I protect anonymity all the time. That's all I'm about is practicing the principles, not in some of my affairs, but all of my affairs, Amy Dresner. Fucking all of them. Okay. Now, but when I was in a different fellowship, it's we'll say it rhymes with M-A... But it sounds, it's more like, it's, it doesn't really rhyme with MI. It's NA. I was in Narcotics. You got it out of me, oh, Amy Dresner.
Okay.
Narcotics Anonymous.
Who cares? I thought you were going to be Sex Addicts Anonymous or Sex
and Love. SLA.
So I was in that.
SLA.
I was in SSA. I was in all those fucking ones. SA.
So I was desperately trying to date soberly, but like, I never had a drinking problem. So I just figured if I went dating, I would just drink. And I did.
How did that work?
It was good. It was good.
Oh, I was a nightmare when I did.
For me, I was pathetic. When I went on dates, I would have a few. I mean, I had my move. I would have a few drinks, and then I would put my hand on their hand. I called it the hand on hand. And if they take the hand, I figure we're good. And if they don't, I figured that's the end
of
the
day.
That's the hand on hand.
You're
that's
such a pussy. Move. Jesus Christ.
You don't think that's a good move?
A hand on hand?
It's low risk.
That's true.
It doesn't put anybody in a bad situation.
Well, then you're feeling it out. You're like, okay, what's going on here? Taking the temperature.
Nobody. It's like, okay.
I can respect that.
You say hand on hand is a good move or a pussy move?
No, I was just giving you shit. I love to give you shit. I mean, who gives you shit on your show? Nobody.
What are you? You've never in the history of Dopey have you listened to any episode, even including the episodes you've been on, which I respect. My dad. He just listens to the episodes he's been on. I respect you in that you don't listen to any of them.
No, because it's going to make me self-conscious. And I don't like, you know, I never read the reviews of my book. I don't read the, you know, comments on articles because it's going to make me like be fucking, it's not going to allow me to be my truthful self. I'm going to be like, oh my God, I need to do this and please people. Or like, it's, you know, my dad said, never read fucking reviews because the good ones will make you think you should have won a Pulitzer Prize, and the bad ones are gonna make you fucking throw yourself out a window with your fucking typewriter. But like, even big actors don't watch themselves on the screen.
No, I hear you.
You know, and also I have body dysmorphic disorder. I'll watch and be like, ew, like I just don't. I'm not that interested in myself. Like, I wish I could, you know. Like, I told the guy that I'm dating now, he was just like, I said, go date someone normal. I'm mentally ill. Go date someone normal. I said, I wouldn't want to date me. I don't even want to be me, bro.
you are sober dating right now. When you how did that happen? And did he do hand on hand?
No. Oh God. So I was staying with a friend during this 5-month period where I was homeless, and she was sober, and he came over to do some work for her. He was sober, and I don't know. There was just like a fucking flash between us. But I was dating someone else sober that I was kind of living with. So I was just like, hey, dude, I can't really like, let this other thing fucking peter out. And that's not me. I'd been celibate for like 6 years. You know what I mean? So it was like very weird. And all of a sudden, like there's all these options. And I was like, don't. And then when I was staying with the other guy, the other sober guy, where it was not working, was not a match. And he texted me, and I was like, dude, I said, don't text me. Like, do not fucking. He goes, I'm just saying hi. I was like, you don't understand. Like, I'm a fucking recovering sex and love addict. Like, just hi. It's like, ning! Like everything lights up. Like, I can't. You can't. I can't have contact with you, dude. I'm living with this person or staying with them. Like, don't. And he was like, fine. I said, just shelve it until this thing, you know. And then so first night in my new place, I'd almost relapsed on pain pills for some root canals. And I'd gotten off them. And there's an article coming out about that. Which is actually, I don't know. I thought it was a bit glib. The guy who the fucking endodontist was an ex-cop. Like, what are the chances? So of course I tell him all my shit, and I was like, "Don't give me pain pills." Like last time on pain pills, I tried to stab my ex, and he was like, "Before I was an endodontist, I was a cop." And I was just like, "Of course you were." Like, right? Fuck, you know. So anyway, I called him, and he was like, "What's up?" And I was just like, "I am kind of having a little bit of suicidal ideation, and I'm a couple days off of pain pills, and I'm alone in my new place, and I feel fucking not right." And he was like, "Let me pick you up and take you to a meeting." And I was like, "That would be great." and he picked me up and we never made it to the meeting. He fingered me in his car and I squirted all over his truck. So that's the truth.
He just did hand on vagina. He didn't do hand on hand.
Yeah, I don't know. Something just happened. I don't even just like, it was just like, I mean, it had been brewing for a while. And then like, I think I fucked him in his sober living. I mean, he's still in sober living. It's like, but he's like almost 2 years sober. And I was like, God, this is such unsober behavior. Amy, you're such a piece of shit.
But what do you think about fucking in sober living? Does that beat fucking in a car or in a house? Like, fucking in sober living.
I mean, it's terrifying because he had a roommate. And I was like, is someone going to walk in at any moment? Like, I'm naked on your bed. And then what, there's like a divider between you and some fucking dude. Like, you know, I just felt like I really, you know, I was just like, this is so, you're almost 11 years sober. And I'm 10 years older than him, too.
So it's like, does it make you feel, it's a youthful thing. It's like a childlike thing. The only time, I haven't had many rehab romances or whatever. Like I've had like more like rehab, infatuations, right. like not like fucking in the laundry room.
But I've had a lot of those.
How many people have you fucked in the laundry room?
Not in the laundry room, but read the fucking book, bitch.
Like, I read the fucking book.
I fucked a celebrity.
Was it Brad Pitt?
No, I wish.
Who did you have sex with? Was it Danny Bonaducci?
Have sex with him, but like that was not in rehab. It was
Have sex with Danny Bonaducci? Sober house?
No, we were both in the program and we were both at my house. But that was years ago. It was like shooting coke. I opened the door. I think I told this story. Remember, I told this story on another episode.
Doesn't matter.
Where he came and I was like, I just shot coke and he opened the door. He'd just done like a talk show, a night talk show, Craig Ferguson. And I was like, hi. And I showed up like in like a negligee and blood pouring down my arm. And I was like, you know, so fucked up. And he was just like, whoa. He was like 8 months sober and like tattooed his sobriety date on his arm, which is so stupid. It's like, because that was not his, you know, final sobriety date. Hello.
Well, it's like reminders.
But I fucked Tom Sizemore, who's dead now.
Oh, rest in peace. He would have been a fantastic dopey guest. What do you remember about sex with Tom Sizemore?
I fucked him on and off for like 9 years.
Is he a good guy?
Yeah, he's actually, I mean, yeah, he can have a bad temper, but he's also can be very sweet. And he is out of control. He's like very horny person. And he had a stroke and he died.
You say he was like, out of control, a very horny person. He had a stroke and he died.
He was, you know, he couldn't get clean.
I'm sure that's what it says on his tombstone.
I mean, he was older. And me, I guess, a little bit older, and he just kept using crystal, and he had a fucking stroke, and he died. Really sad.
Did you get high with him?
I went to his house, his big house, before he lost everything, right after rehab. We were at Promises together, and I wasn't smoking meth then because I'd already given myself epilepsy, so I was shooting coke at that time because coke is natural, and it's different. That's how I rationalized it. He was smoking meth. I think I took one hit maybe off the pipe. And he was just like, have some GHB. It'll make you horny. And I'm like, I'm already fucking horny. And he gave it to me. And I fucking, as I usually do, OD'd and just puked and puked and puked and puked. And then I fucking fucked him.
And you fucked him at Promises?
Yeah. He was like, he was very upset because he was like, if he got kicked out of Promises, he was going to go to prison. He was like very nervous and I was just like, shut the fuck up. And I like shoved him down on the bed. Like I was aggressive. I was like in my 30s. I didn't give a fuck.
Well, and were you using at Promises?
No, this is me naturally.
Okay. So that's almost sober dating. And now you just you fucked the dude at his sober house. So what is more thrilling, to fuck Tom Sizemore in rehab in your 30s or to fuck dude in sober living now? At whatever age you might be now.
It's a totally different experience. One is like, oh, they're both risky, but it's like the person that I'm dating now, we fight a lot. He is, the sex is like mind blowing. So I'm wondering if like I'm in a sex addiction phase, but just with one person, which is better than, you know, fucking everyone on Tinder. But it's like, that is definitely, I'm like, we're addicted to each other sexually. I'm not sure that's so great. But it's also like, he sleeps over and we cuddle and we, you know, go out to eat together and we go to meetings. So I don't know. The whole thing is confusing. We got in a fight right before this. We fight all the time.
What's the importance of sober dating? What are the benefits?
I mean, they're not going to judge your past. They're going to fucking, they understand, you know, like that you want to, you're going to drink 6-shot lattes. They're going to fucking understand your, well, the guy that I'm dating now said, called me a nympho, which is like, oh, okay.
That should be a compliment for you.
Is it? I don't know.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
And that's what that was my nickname in rehab, in my 6th rehab.
Was what?
Nympho.
That's not a very complimentary nickname.
No shit. That's what the text called me. They're like, nympho, you. And I was like, Jesus Christ. So it's like, I don't know. There's something coming, like I'm coming around like all full circle. And I'm like, is this good? This seems not good. You know, we could go to meetings together. Like, honestly, his program has inspired me. Like, he is really into his program. I mean, he's not even 2 years sober, so he kind of has to be. And it's like, now I'm at 11 years, and I'm like, I got these motherfuckers kicking back. I'm a raft, you know, which is dangerous. But I mean, he has a lot of sponsees, and that shit is inspiring. We speak, I mean, we had a vein comparing contest, because he was a fucking junkie, too. Which is just like a normal, you're not going to do that with a normie. Right. Like, who's got better veins still? You know what right. I mean? I mean, that's just like ridiculous. It's stupid shit.
It's a great thing to have in common.
But it's like, we get it. And it's like, you know, we have shared histories. It's not going to tell me something that's going to fucking freak me out. It's then vice versa. I did tell him, do not read my book. I don't want him to read my book.
Why?
Because I fucked too many people, man. And he's freaked out about my mental health, as he should be. And it's like a zillion suicide attempts in there. Like, in psych wards. Like, it's going to freak him out. Like, he was very, he could, like, he was just, like, a musician and fucking on tour and, like, you know, smoking and shooting heroin. It was completely, like, he could hold a job. I still can't hold a fucking job 11 years over.
Well, you're famous author, Amy Dopey Drudz. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and but you the royalties aren't enough. You know what I'm saying? We gotta do the second part.
No, I mean, you just need to put your work into your work and make money at it. Like, I'm going to shut up about that.
Okay.
What about the old expression, two sickies don't make a welly? Have you ever heard that?
I can see that. I have heard that. And it's like, you know, for sure. I mean, there can be some truth to that. But also, I mean, I dated a normie for almost 2 years. And I wrote a piece about why I would never date a normie again after that relationship ended.
Why?
Let's look at it. They don't understand that you're not your past. You know what I mean? Like, they say, oh, I don't care about your past. But they do. They fucking do. You know what I mean? And they're constantly, like, afraid you're going to relapse while they smoke, like, one Parliament and drink, like, a Mike's Hard Lemonade, you know, because they're not an addict. And it's like, if you have, like, a puff on someone's cigarette, they're convinced you're going to be shooting dope in your neck. And, like, they just are fucking freaked out. And it's like, I'm a totally different person than I was, you know? And they're just, yeah, it's just like there's a scarlet letter on you, you know? And I think that they're kind of, I mean, I hate to say this, I think they're kind of pussies. Like, little things are big things to them because they haven't had, like, let's say, like, the shit that we have. Like, we've had people die. We've died ourselves, like, and come back to life. We've had ODs. People have lost limbs. Like, shit is really, we've had a lot of shitty, like, I have a battery in my fucking chest. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, there's that saying, like, church is people for afraid of or afraid of hell, and A is for people who've been there. But it's like, I'm worried. I'm getting behind on my mortgage. It's like, oh, do you have to wear a goddamn bike helmet because you gave yourself epilepsy from fucking meth? Like, fucking shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? Like, they just, you know, it's like, I've been 5150 more times than I've been a Whole Foods, bitch. Like, get a real problem and then we'll talk. Like, they just don't have the same depth of life experience. You know what I mean?
I think the interesting thing is, like, yeah, like, they're pussies, right? But in reality, we're so sensitive that to deal with somebody who is in recovery, the sensitivity can be relatable. And, like, that seems like the greatest thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, I am fighting with this person I'm dating. He's going to come over after this. But it's like, you know, yeah, I think that, you know, you can tell them anything. You know what I mean? And, like, they're sensitive too. And they also, like, you can talk about anything and they're going to get it. They're not going to be freaked out by it.
Having a program is a great shortcut to communication also. Like, I think, like,
absolutely. You're speaking the same language.
Exactly. I think that's, you know, that sounds good.
What was the other reasons I said? They don't get that the darkness is funny. Like, when I would tell him stories, he was totally freaked out. I tried to stab my ex, or, you know, stories about me shooting, you know, coke in a ballet helmet he thought was not funny at all.
Like, really?
No.
He didn't think that was funny?
No. He started to read my book and he started to cry. And I was like, okay. You know, like, yeah, no.
He's very sensitive.
And it's like, they don't get like that maybe you had a sex addiction and you fucked, you know, trolls and psychopaths and, you know, people too ugly to be on, you know, extras on The Walking Dead. But now it's hilarious. You know what I mean? Because it has to be, or it's like unbearable and shameful. So it's like, you know, like I remember telling him that I met my coke dealer outside Cedars-Sinai right before I was about to have a procedure. And he was like horrified by that. I was like, what are you talking about? That's brilliant.
Seems like it doesn't seem like he used that many drugs then.
He didn't. No, he'd never done hard drugs.
Okay, well, that's good.
He was like a normie. Like, he drank and smoked pot.
Oh, this was the
never
normie guy.
This is normie. Okay. And then, yeah. You know, it's like, I don't know. I mean, people that are in trying to get sober or are sober, like, you have to look at your life and you have to look at your shit. And it's like, you know, there's that quote, the unexamined life is not worth living. And it's like, you know, supposedly it was Socrates or whatever, but it's like, you know, they're not looking at their shit and not digging and dealing with their stuff because they don't have to. We have to, or we're going to fucking die. You know what I mean? We can't fucking get, you know, and I don't think they're as intense. You know, I remember him saying to me, nobody can ever love you back the way that you love. That's what he said to me. And,
that's what the normie said.
Yeah.
That was very insightful. Very passionate statement.
And he was like, you know, you're the strongest person I know. And I was like, oh God, you know, but also like, I remember him just being freaked out. Like, oh my God, why do you have to vape and play Ruzzle and have, you know, a fucking, you know, 85 shot latte and have like, you know, System of a Down blasting on fucking 20 in your car all the same. Like, what's, why? You know what I mean? And like, why are you like so fucking horny? And why are you like, he didn't understand that like my intensity on everything. Everything was always, was weird to him. Like that I was like, everything was a lot. I still needed a lot of everything. That was right. Early sobriety. This was like the first couple of years.
And what we're really talking about is like having things in common, common worldview.
Totally.
That's the upside. Here's the last question. When you were first getting sober, what did dating look like? I know a lot of people say, wait for the first year till you date. It sounds good, but is that really a thing? Don't you think it's hard to say not only will you be getting sober, but you will have to keep it in your pants for a year?
I think that's okay. First of all, it's not in the big book. Second of all, I mean, it's a great idea. And I have sponsored like gay meth addicts that I said, you really, because their sex life is so connected to drugs. Like, I'm like, you can't fuck around for a while. Let's just chill on that and they've stayed clean because of that. But it's like, if you take away that and you have a bunch of alcoholics and drug addicts who are looking and fiending for dopamine, what are they going to fucking do? They're going to fuck each other. They're going to smoke cigarettes. They're going to drink too much fucking caffeine. Like, of course they are. Like, that's just the way it is. I mean, in the beginning, my dating looked like fucking people. I fucked a lot of people in the program, which I don't recommend, because then you go into a meeting, you're like, please don't let me see anyone. I fucked people. You know, only once did I 13 step someone.
What was that?
I got my heart broken.
Tell us the story.
I was about a year and a half and he had like 7 months and he was polyamorous and he fucking, you know, I'd be like, what are you doing tomorrow night? And he was like, I'm going on a date. And I just start crying. It's like, I couldn't.
But how did you 13 step him?
Well, I think that's what's considered when you, yeah, we were like fucking and so we were dating for 4 months, you know? And
I was 13 stepped.
Oh, I was 13 stepped so much. Are you kidding? I wrote an article and it was like, I got 13 stepped and I liked it. And people fucking went bananas.
It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
I don't know that it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I got my heart broken. I did relapse over one guy. One guy had like 17 years and I had like 4 months. And he was pretty manipulative and used the program as a weapon. And he was not very nice. And I relapsed.
Right. And that's,
I showed up at his house in a fucking blackout. I don't remember anything. And then I came to, and I was in the psych ward with bruises on my wrists, and I don't know what happened. But no, I got fucked by a lot of people with a lot of time, but they just wanted to fuck you. You know, you were like the fresh meat, you know? And it was like, they'd fuck you and then that was it.
Well,
and
nobody was like, wanted to fuck me. They wanted to fuck you.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I was, you know, it was like in my 30s and it was just like, oof, you know, I just got, and it was always the same dudes that always preyed on the new people. And then like, you know, I mean, I had a sponsor. I mean, my bad for having a male sponsor, I guess, but like, I have a male sponsor now, but he's like 67 years old.
Did you have an other male sponsor that made a move?
Yeah, I had made a move. He fucked me during a relapse.
How did that happen?
He was calling in to check on me. I was drinking Four Loko all the time, and I was like going through a divorce and a criminal trial, and he was calling to check on me all the time. And I mean, I knew why I was going over there. I'm not stupid. I mean, like, I knew why I was going to his house. Like, you know, I was acting out. I was super self-destructive at that time. And I, you know, was staying with my friend. I was like, it was just like everything was out of control. And, but I think that what really hurt was that he fucked me and he never fucking called me again. And
he was your sponsor. That's horrible.
He had been my sponsor. Yeah.
That is the worst.
Yeah. That really hurt. That really fucking, I mean, that's like, that really fucking hurt, you know, but it's,
but
like,
that's the core of men with the men, women with the women. It's so dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, I have to speak at a meeting that he goes to on Monday. I've done it before. And he was like, I saw him there and I was like, oh, well, you used to sponsor me. Would you like to share? Like, you know,
oh my God.
It's like, it's, like, I mean, I really told my sponsor, I was like, I don't want to go to that meeting. I don't want to see that piece of shit. He goes, you know who he used to be. You don't know who he is now. Like, that's, well, he never made amends to me, motherfucker. So, but,
yeah, that's true. They're both true. Both of those things.
It
are
is true. You know, but again, it's like, I was never raped. You know what I mean? Like, I was never raped. I was never against my will. So it's like, I knew what I was doing, but I just didn't realize how much I was going to, how incredibly emotionally fragile I was. I wanted love. I wanted connection. I wanted attention so bad. I was newly sober and like sex. I just wanted to get out of myself. And it was like, you know, and then I ended up getting really, I got hurt a lot.
Totally. I think the most important thing around dating when you're newly sober is having caution, you know what
totally.
I mean?
Being
absolutely. Cautious, being responsible. I mean, like, I sound like a fucking, what is it, after school special. But it's like,
PSA.
Make sure you love each other. Make sure there's a loving kindness in your partner. No, I mean, like, I don't know what to say, because it's like, I think it's dangerous. It's dangerous to date in early sobriety. But I think having fun in recovery is like the
is
best
important.
Thing you
oh,
can do.
Oh, it's totally. My early days of sobriety and like getting dressed up and going to meetings and being like, oh my God, he's here. Like, you know, and all of us going to the diner after was like the best memories ever. It was so fun, you know? And I see the guy I'm dating having that, you know, having that social thing. But I don't have that now at the period that I'm at.
You need to like get going. You know what I mean? You need to get out and get to more meetings and get dressed
up. No, but also I've moved a bunch of times.
I'm just playing. Like,
no, but it's like, I mean, I miss that time, you know? And it's like, I don't like, also, I mean, I've called my sponsor to complain about this fucking guy and my sponsor agrees with him. And that's irritating as shit. So
your sponsor
like,
agrees with what?
Whatever. I'm like, I call him, we fight about something and I call him and I'm like, he said this and I blah, blah. He goes, he's right. And I was like, right. Ugh, great. Right. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, in sobriety, you have someone else to run shit by. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that he runs his shit by anyone, but like I run my shit by people.
Well, I think that's a really, really good point in general. With sober dating, it's like the key word.
You've got
is
your
sober.
Own therapist, pastor, person to run shit by. So you're not just like crazy in your head.
Well, you're talking about the partner, but I'm saying if you're sober dating, it would mean that you're sober. And if you're sober, it would mean you had a program. And if you had a program, it would mean you run your dating life through somebody that you
totally.
Trust so you don't fucking fuck it up and act
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely, yeah.
And act recklessly.
Yeah, my sponsor was just like, he's not your enemy, honey. He's your choice. So, like, you know, either accept him the way that he is or choose someone
yeah.
else. Like,
right.
yeah, it's like, I'm sick of hearing about this shit because it's the same shit over and over and over again.
Right. Acceptance. Acceptance is the answer to all of our problems.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Acceptance is the answer to all of our problems.
I don't
problems.
Think I could date a normie, you know, again. I wouldn't right. want to.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of bases. Do you think, and I think you guys should check out the Lucid dating app to find very sober, very attractive people to date.
Yeah, totally.
Do you think so, Amy?
Absolutely.
Do you think I sound creepy when I say very attractive?
Absolutely. You sound really creepy.
Do you think I sound very creepy or very attractive?
I do. No,
attractively
you sound
creepy?
No. Just
when you take that
creepy
voice and you couple it with hand on hand, are you just that's no good.
Gross.
That's no good. Is it gross? Do you think you're not impressed with the hand on hand?
No, I think it's a subtle way. I mean, it's, you know, you want to test the waters.
And you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. You don't want to violate. You don't want to, like, get rejected.
Well, now
harshly.
Consent is, like, a huge thing. When you and I were fucking around, I mean, that wasn't even a real thing. Like, consent, it was like, yes meant may, no meant maybe, and maybe meant yes. You know what I mean? Like, at least in college, when I was in college.
I mean, I'm feeling self-conscious about the hand-on-hand now.
No, I'm just fucking with you. God.
I'm just, Amy.
No, I think it's a fucking smart move.
What do you suggest to a sober man or woman, like, wanting to make the move? Would you say?
I think that, you know what? I wanted to say this. I think what's great about Lucid sober dating is, like, meeting people on an app, a sober app, like, because if you meet people in the rooms, like, and that goes awry, which it usually does, then you have to, like, break up the meetings. Like, it's like, okay, like, let's have custody. Like, I'll go to this meeting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and you go Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Like, you don't want to run in, and you don't want to have anyone run you out of a meeting either. So it's like, this is meeting other sober people, but you're out, you're not in the same sober circles. And I think that that's really important.
Right. Exactly. I think you don't shit where you eat. You don't fuck where you eat. You don't date where you meet. How's that?
Totally. I mean, like, I spoke at this meeting and this guy's friend, like, totally fucking flipped out about me and was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And he didn't know that I was dating the guy. And he was like, oh my God, her, Amy, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, remember when I told you that I was, like, hooking up with this girl? And he was like, yeah. He was like, that's the girl.
Well, what was the shocking thing there?
That the guy was super smitten with me and didn't know. And then he was like, oh, like, good for you, man. Right on, you know.
So Lucid lets you meet people that aren't at your meetings that are sober.
Yeah, I think that's super important.
That's advantageous because you don't want to lose.
No,
your sober
it's a fucking
world.
Nightmare. It's you like fucking someone you work with. It's terrible.
Right. So rather than hitting on the person at your meeting, join Lucid and date soberly.
I want to take a walk around the world. I wonder would it do me any good? Until I get some money in my pocket, then I guess I'll just have to walk around my neighborhood. But I want to be good so bad. Want to be so good, so bad, so bad. I want to be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. And I want to take a ride up in the sky. Watch the airplane just pass me by. And I want to see a Lear jetliner take a dive. Just to show all of these people what it means to be alive. But I want to be good so bad. Want to be so good, so bad, so bad. I want to be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. And my shadow's getting smaller and smaller. And it's time to where I stand. Shadow's getting smaller and smaller. And it's time to where I stand. And I wonder would they pay it any mind when I leave this busted city far behind. I'll take the high road however far it winds. Because peace and love are very, very, very hard to find. And I want to be good so bad. Want to be good so bad, so bad. I want to be good so bad. Bad desire's all I ever had. Damn it, all these suckers make me mad. And it's all I ever had. And it's all I ever had. And these suckers make me mad, and I want to call my dad, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had. And these suckers make me mad, and it's all I ever had, and I want to call my dad, and it's all I ever had, and it's all I ever had.